maybe quantum theory is already knocking on the door of the unfathomable. But if science cannot answer some ultimate question, what makes anybody think that religion can? I suspect that neither the Cambridge nor the Oxford astronomer really believe that theologians have any expertise that enables them to answer questions that are too deep for science. I suspect that both astronomers were, yet again, bending over backwards to be polite. Theologians have nothing worthwhile to say about anything else. Let's throw them a sop and let them worry away at a couple of questions that nobody can answer and maybe never will. Unlike my astronomer friends, I don't think we should even throw them a sop. I have yet to see any good reason to suppose that theology, as opposed to biblical history, literature, etc., is a subject at all.
Similarly, we can all agree that science's entitlement to advise us on moral values is problematic, to say the least. But does Gould really want to cede to religion the right to tell us what is good and what is bad? The fact that it has nothing else to contribute to human wisdom is no reason to hand religion a free license to tell us what to do. Which religion, anyway? The one in which we happen to have been brought up? To which chapter, then, of which book of the Bible should we turn? For they are far from unanimous, and some of them are odious by any reasonable standards. How many literalists have read enough of the Bible to know that the death penalty is prescribed for adultery, for gathering sticks on the Sabbath, and for cheeking your parents? If we reject Deuteronomy and Leviticus, as all enlightened moderns do, by what criteria do we then decide which of religion's moral values to accept? Or should we pick and choose among all the world's religions until we find one whose moral teaching suits us? If so, again, we must ask, by what criterion do we choose? And if we have independent criteria for choosing among religious moralities, why not cut out the middleman and go straight for the moral choice without the religion? Chapter 7 returns to such questions.
I simply do not believe that Gould could possibly have meant much of what he wrote in Rocks of Ages. As I say, we've all been guilty of bending over backwards to be nice to an unworthy but powerful opponent, and I can only think that this is what Gould was doing. It is conceivable that he really did intend his unequivocally strong statement that science has nothing whatever to say about the question of God's existence. We neither affirm nor deny it, we simply can't comment on it as scientists. This sounds like agnosticism of the permanent and irrevocable kind, full-blown PAP. It implies that science cannot even make probability judgments on the question. This remarkably widespread fallacy, many repeat it like a mantra, but few of them, I suspect, have thought it through, embodies what I refer to as the poverty of agnosticism. Gould, by the way, was not an impartial agnostic, but strongly inclined towards de facto atheism. On what basis did he make that judgment if there is nothing to be said about whether God exists? The God hypothesis suggests that the reality we inhabit also contains a supernatural agent who designed the universe and, at least in many versions of the hypothesis, maintains it and even intervenes in it with miracles, which are temporary violations of his own otherwise grandly immutable laws. Richard Swinburne, one of Britain's leading theologians, is surprisingly clear on the matter in his book, Is There a God?
What the theist claims about God is that he does have a power to create, conserve, or annihilate anything, big or small. And he can also make objects move or do anything else. He can make the planets move in the way that Kepler discovered that they move, or make gunpowder explode when we set a match to it. Or he can make planets move in quite different ways, and chemical substances explode or not explode under quite different conditions from those which now govern their behaviour. God is not limited by the laws of nature. He makes them, and he can change or suspend them if he chooses.
Just too easy, isn't it? Whatever else this is, it is very far from noma. And whatever else they may say, those scientists who subscribe to the separate magisteria school of thought should concede that a universe with a supernaturally intelligent creator is a very different kind of universe from one without. The difference between the two hypothetical universes could hardly be more fundamental in principle, even if it is not easy to test in practice. And it undermines the complacently seductive dictum that science must be completely silent about religion's central existence claim. The presence or absence of a creative superintelligence is unequivocally a scientific question, even if it is not in practice, or not yet, a decided one. So also is the truth or falsehood of every one of the miracle stories that religions rely upon to impress multitudes of the faithful.